offering a most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. My most loving pranams at Bhagwan. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind. And today to join us is another member of, I would say, Radio Sai team. He's quite often a part of all our programs, and we're very happy to have him here. Brother Amay is here to join us, but the reason why we have called him is because this week is a very, very special week for Swami's institutions. This weekend, we are celebrating the golden jubilee of the Vrindavan campus. Of course, the Vrindavan ashram itself is more than 50 years old. We'll talk about all of that. But in 1969, Swami started the Arts and Science College, which later became one of the campuses of the Sri Sathya Sai University, the Vrindavan campus. And we are celebrating the 50 years of that beautiful moment when Swami started his association with students in the Vrindavan campus, which grew into this huge tree which has nourished so many thousands of people all around the world. And I think those of you who follow our series, The Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, would have heard of those many, many memories which were born and cherished from the days in Vrindavan. So without much ado, let me invite Arvind and Amay to join all of us. We're going to reminisce about the Vrindavan campus, Swami at Vrindavan, and what Vrindavan means to devotees, to Sevadal, to students. And that's what this week's Afternoon Satsang is going to be all about. So let's invite Arvind and Amay. Sai Ram, Amay, and Sai Ram, Arvind.
Sai Ram, Sai Ram, Amay, Sai Ram, Prem, Sai Ram to all our listeners. We have Brother Amay only for a brief stint here. And so that's why, you know, as Brother Prem said, without further ado, I'm sure that
you have many, many memories, Amay, because you have been part of Vrindavan as a devotee, as a member of the Sevadal, as a student, as a research scholar, you know, in possibly all the different forms and roles you have been at Vrindavan, and it's something that's close to your heart with many memories. So why don't we begin off right away by dishing some of the most delicious ones?
Sai Ram, to both of you, and Sai Ram, dear listeners. I think the entire build-up for the last month or so has been for this GJC. And we have so many of these GJCs, the Golden Jubilee Celebrations. Can't believe even that has now a short form for it. In fact, you know, when we were talking a few months, maybe a year ago, we were just reminiscing amongst ourselves as bhajan groups that probably the era between 1965 and 1970 was the proliferation of the Sai movement, in the sense almost at least 60 or 70 major samitis, whether it was Dharma Kshetra, whether it is the Ambattur Samiti, or whether it is Trai Vrindavan, whether
Coastal
it is
Karnataka.
Coastal Karnataka. All of these samitis are now celebrating their golden jubilee. You know, so you can almost make out that probably between the years of 1967 and 70 was actually the mushrooming of, you know, the Sai movement. Well, coming to my own memories, of course, it doesn't date back that long, but my parents' first darshan of Swami was in Vrindavan, in the Sai Ram Shed in 1975, immediately after their wedding. And my father recollects, he said, you know, he had gone there without much faith in Swami. In fact, when Swami would come to Bombay in the 1960s, a very dear friend of him, Mr. Ramesh Sawant, who eventually became the state president of Maharashtra, used to keep coaxing my father, saying, please come for, you know, Swami's darshan, and my father would never pay attention to it. Until 1975, when after his wedding, he had the first darshan of Swami, and he says, he recollects that saying, when he was there in the Sai Ramesh, in the Sai Ram hall, Sai Ram shed, he noticed that Swami kept taking, you know, kerchief from a lot of devotees. And he was wondering, why is Swami taking so many kerchiefs? And after the darshan, when he asked my mother said, didn't you see he was actually materializing vibhuti? And my father said, at that time it struck him that probably the lack of faith in his eyes blinded him to the vision of Swami materializing vibhuti. Yeah, and he says, for all of us who know how big Sai Ram shed was, or how small Sai Ram shed was, it was impossible to miss. You know, you could at best be sitting probably in the 12th or the 13th line, and you know. And he says, I cannot believe that I could not see Swami materializing vibhuti.
Even once.
He said, all I saw was he grabbing at, you know, kerchiefs, and he was wondering what is this phenomenon. And it was my mother who had to tell him that, you know, Swami materialized more than 15 times Vibhuti during the darshan. And he was, oh my God, am I so lack of faith, you know, mm-hmm. such an amount of lack of faith that I'm not able to see. So that was one of the first, you know, kind of experiences that they narrate to me. Of course, my own introduction to Vrindavan came much, much later, because as a primary school student, I was always attached to Prashanti Nilayam. And in fact, you know, the Swami moving to Vrindavan kind of was the signal of the academic year coming to an end. So oftentimes it was after Shivaratri that Swami would go to Vrindavan, and that pretty much meant that it was holidays time for us.
That was also symbolic, I think. It's like Swami's official time is over, now the happy, homely and fun time begins.
Exactly, exactly. So somehow, you know, we were not attracted because that was always vacation time for us.
Right.
But I would say that my first tryst with Vrindavan really started in 1997 when I moved back to Bangalore. And ever since, some of my most cherished memories I have been in Vrindavan. Just to narrate a few, when I joined the Seva Dal in 1999, one of the duties which only the Karnataka Seva Dal have is to do the Trai duty, which is also called the Monkey Boys. Mm-hmm. Okay, the Monkey Boys predominantly because there were so many monkeys in and around Vrindavan on those, you know, on those trees around Vrindavan, that when Swami would actually call devotees for interview, you know, all the devotees had to leave all their belongings behind before they entered the interview room. Right. So all their mats and sometimes even their purses containing passports and, you know, foreign exchange and all of that would be left outside. And these monkeys would just come and take away, you know, these kind of things. And imagine a devotee after finishing a blissful interview comes out and he has literally lost all moha because his passport is gone, his money is gone, you know. And so Swami had stationed two old people. Okay, he had stationed two Sevadals whose job was to be custodians of those articles. It seems it so happened, this is much before my time, that one Swami came out and he noticed two old people standing over there.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, why are they standing here? He says, Swami, because, you know, all the other youngsters were busy doing work. This was kind of considered to be not work oriented at all.
This Seva.
Because you just had to stand there. And it seems the you know, what Swami commented was, oh my God, imagine if these people go back to their, you know, their locations from where their areas where they have come, and if people ask them, so what is the work that you did? And they say, we were just standing there, you know, guarding, you know, things against monkeys. You know, how terrible it will be that Sathya Sai Baba gives such kind of work to them. Put two youngsters, you know. And that was the birth of the Monkey Boys. So two of us, amongst the boys who cleaned up the entire Trai residence, two boys' job was to stand outside, you know, the interview room. And that, in fact, went on to become one of the most coveted roles you could get as a Sevadal. Because, you know, Swami would just come out, or the devotees would come out and call somebody to take photographs of, you know, group photographs of devotees with Swami. So you could be one of those who could, you know, slide into the interview room without any without any purpose and kind of spend almost 10-15 minutes sometimes. Mm. And you could almost, you'll have a privy to the conversation that is happening inside if it is loud enough. So sometimes Swami could be either talking loudly, or the devotees could be talking, or, you know, the peals of laughter that would emanate from those rooms. So all of that is what we would get, you know, when we would stand over there. Of course, by the time I joined the Sevadal, the monkeys had left Vrindavan, but the Monkey Boys continued to stay there. So our job, one of the jobs was just to stand outside the interview room, literally probably about 25-30 feet away, and just be there. The monkeys never came, but the boys continued. So this was one of my monkey duties, Monkey Boys duties. Swami was finishing darshan, and he was, so, you know, if you look at, go back to the, let me try and recreate the Trai Vrindavan, Swami's beautiful lotus shaped residence in the middle of a moat. Of course, the moat was supposed to have water, but it never had water. And there were two bridges which connected the, you know, the you know, barren land or the normal land with the residence, which was so, again, very, very symbolic in the sense that you had to cross the bridge, you know, the bridge. And so there were two bridges. One was obviously the main entrance. The other one was the interview room entrance. And so I was standing at the interview room, and oftentimes after the morning darshan, Swami would go into the interview room directly.
Right.
So Swami was, this was, I think, the year 2000, March of 2000, Swami's 75th birthday. And Swami was walking on that, and we had to keep the entire place obviously spick and span. And suddenly I noticed Swami pulling up his robe and jumping across something. Okay, now this is 75-year-old Swami. He's not a young Swami, okay? And he jumping, immediately our hearts were in our mouth and we knew that something had gone amiss. Okay, and then Swami just turns around and looks at me and one more boy and says, Papam Chimulu breakfast tintunnaru. Okay, because there was a line of ants which had formed across that and they were carrying a dead moth or a dead butterfly or whatever. Okay, and Swami looks at them and says, Papam Chimulu, that is ants, eating their breakfast. And so needless to say, of course, it was a very sweet remark by Swami, but we ran with brooms and, you know, the holder.
To disturb their breakfast.
And that's exactly what Swami said. Hey, no. Induku disturb chestunaru. Why are you disturbing? Don't disturb. Let them eat. Okay, and that day, all the devotees who were called for interview had to make the ceremonial jump across, not to disturb. But that day, you know, what struck me was, here is a Lord of the universe who could feel the hunger of an ant. You know, for him, when he says, Anoraniyan Mahato Mahiyan, that is the Lord. And when he says in his beautiful, poem, love is my form, truth is my breath, bliss is my food. While we remember these three lines, what we forget is the next two lines, which is my life is my message. And what is my life?
Expansion
is my life. That Vishala Bhavam, he was able to identify himself with the hunger of an ant. So that is what kind of stays. That is one of my beautiful instances that I remember of this. And ever since I've been trying to practice it. Unfortunately with us, our love is so sankuchita, it is so narrow that I love only my father, my mother, my family. But Swami here, Swami saying, at least if not the ants, at least love your own fellow men, human beings.
It appears as if that when you said that Swami said replace with youngsters, more than what they may speak about Swami, I think this was another of Swami's excuse to bring in the youngsters to help them imbibe lessons for life.
Absolutely.
Because as he said, the monkeys were gone, but the monkey boys remained. Mm-hmm. And I think it is more like training for the monkey mind.
Absolutely.
Than the monkeys. Yes.
Because one more scene which I remember as seeing as students when talking about the young Sevadal who were there. I don't know what was the duty, but there used to be one boy holding a long pole. Yes. With a leaf tied to the topmost part of the thing. And he would be standing, I think, right under Swami's dining hall's window.
Swami's bedroom
window. And just be looking at that window and standing there, I don't know for how long.
Yeah, so it was back in the days of Ram Brahmam Garu, mm-hmm. who was the caretaker of Vrindavan. And there were lots of birds, you know, because again, where, you know, lots of trees, so lots of birds. And apparently Swami just remarked once to him, because Swami came out in the afternoon and his face was kind of a little sickly. Mm-hmm. So he just remarked to him, to Ram Brahmam Garu asked Swami, Swami, didn't you get good rest? He says, no, those birds outside were disturbing me. And that is what gave, rise to this new duty, which was called pigeon duty. Okay, so the monkey boys did the pigeon duty. And the job was to stand. So when Swami would retire in the morning, the job was to stand down in the lawns, hold a big pole, and just ensure that birds do not perch on the windowsill of Swami. Okay, and once again, the pigeons left, but the pigeon duty continued, and oftentimes it became one of the most unnecessary duties in a sense, till about a couple of years before I joined.
Mm-hmm.
So what used to happen is the boy just had to stand there for an hour, doing nothing, you know, until one day when Swami spoke to one of the boys standing down there from his bedroom, you know, it was like...
Oh, from the window he spoke.
From the bedroom window. Swami had a long conversation with the boy who was holding the pole. After which, this duty became such a big hit. Everybody wanted to do this duty for only 10 minutes. Means like, all the three boys had to get this duty because you don't know in which 10 minutes he will come out. You know,
it Swami, became the pole position.
The pole position, yes. So it literally became like, you know, you stood there and then you kept praying, Swami, today, now you come out, I'm standing here, you know. And then after 10 minutes, the guy would say, hey, my chance now,
yeah, you know. Actually, I think that was the most beautiful thing. Yes. Because as students, when you would go past three, you would find these young boys holding that pole with... a kind of focus on that window, which, you know, you wouldn't otherwise see in youngsters. Yes. I think, you know, when you were saying that Swami replaced the elderly with the young, it is not because the young, you know, as Swami said, that they will not go and talk about this as their seva or whatever it is. It is to give them that opportunity, you know, to focus on Swami and, of course, to learn about His expansive love too, yeah. You know, in those small incidents.
So talking about that, another very, very, very beautiful chance that we as Thrai boys, as monkey boys got was, there were about 10 or 11 of us. There were vantage positions for each one of them. Like one of the position was, so everybody got to stand in all the positions once in the whole week's duty. So one of the duties was like just standing right opposite to the Thrai door, the beautiful teak wood door. And so the first darshan that you will get, like, you know, the doors open and Swami walks out, that used to be one duty. Another duty was the door duty, which is in the evening, Swami wouldn't go out, but He would come directly on the Shanti Vedika.
Onto the stage via the back door.
Via back door. Hmm. So the opening of that back door, okay, that was given to the Thrai boys. So again, you got this duty once in your week, you know, and that would be a absolutely stunning and most mesmerizing kind of duty, because as Swami walked, you know, you had to wait for His signal to open the door.
Hmm.
Okay. And what would happen before the signal would be a multifarious things. Like, you know, Swami would just stand there and talk to somebody else. He would talk to you. Sometimes He'll just walk into the AV room, which was right next to that door. And so you had beautiful proximity. So oftentimes when the three times that I did monkey duty, Swami would come and He would like say something like, oh, are you the singer kind of, you know, you sing, right? So, that intimacy. And one day when Swami walked up to there, and then Swami looks at me and then He says, is my hair okay? You know, He would often say before, like, you know, stepping out, mm-hmm. He would just, you know, the crown, beautiful crown of hair. Just pat it. He would just adjust it and say, is my hair okay? And when I first time when I got this, I was like, what do you say now? Like, do you give a critical evaluation of His hairstyle or, you know, or... So, I just melted there. I still remember, because the sweetness with which Swami asked that, Swami, you're just so beautiful. Like, who cares how your strands of hair are, you know? And then, so I just folded my hands. I said, Swami, and whatever I had expressed, He expressed to me in the same way, you know, oh, like that, you know. And so that stays in my mind, absolutely, you know, kind of entrenched in my heart of how Swami would have those interactions.
If I can cruelly pluck you out of Thrai Vrindavan compound and put you out, because I'm sure Brother Amai has experienced not just inside the compound, he was also one of the lead singers of the Vrindavan Bhajan group, and you have sung for so many years. So maybe we can get a sample of any experience as a singer in Vrindavan before, you know.
Oh, plenty. I think one which really strikes my mind is, so as Bhajan singers, we would be sitting in the first row, very close to the stage. So when Swami would come out in the evenings, until He almost reaches the stage, you cannot see Him. You virtually cannot see Him because, you know, the depth, the height of the stage will block you off. So you had to only assume or look at the other devotees and make out where Swami is, you know. So one day what I decided is, when I had heard this, you know, this instance of picturizing Swami and visualizing Swami in your heart, I had heard one of the devotees talk about it. And so I said, let me practice it. And so I remember I was singing, Satya Dharma Shanti Prema Swarupa Prashanti Nilaya Deva. So as soon as I started this bhajan, the door had opened, because, you know, all the moment the door opens, all the devotees' hands go like this. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at the devotee's hand and you know that now Swami has come out, but I can't see Swami, you know. And so what I did was, as soon as this bhajan started, I closed my eyes. I knew Swami is coming. And so I started picturizing in my heart Swami actually walking towards the stage. And so I'm closing my eyes and I've reached this line where, you know, Shiva Shakti Swarupa Baba. You know, and I'm now thinking in my mind's eye that now Swami has stepped on to the stage, and now if I open my eyes, I should be able to see Swami. Okay. And exactly at that time, I open my eyes, and guess what? Swami is exactly where I have thought Him to be. Okay. And as an acknowledgement from there, no, He looks at me and says, You know, he kind of nods saying, you know. So that nod would be something that Swami would always give to a singer. You know, but for me, that nod was a very different nod because it was almost like, you know, the Swami inside of you and the one outside was like the one similar, you know. Mm. And though it was nothing but that just sharing of an kind of a glance together, but it's etched in my memory once again because that is what I kind of still hold on to when I sing here and when we miss Swami, you know, his physical form today. It's that, yes, Swami, you know what? I'm going to cherish you in the mind's eye because if I can create, if the outside Swami is as real as the inside Swami, then the vice versa is also true. So, yeah, that is one of my most cherished memories. of course, as Sevadals, we were never allowed to do a personal thing. You cannot sit over there and give a personal letter to someone.
Oh, you can't ask for personal request. Yes, you're on duty.
You're on duty.
Even while singing bhajans?
Even while singing bhajans.
Okay.
So unless Swami talks to you something personally, you should not be sitting there.
You can't initiate.
You cannot initiate anything. So maybe I'll just end it with this. I was doing my chartered accountancy. My exams happened to be on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And as Sevadals, we would sing on Thursdays and Sundays. So that Thursday, because of exam, I couldn't go to Vrindavan. Okay. And I kind of went on Sunday. And my exams did not go too well. Mm-hmm. So on Sunday morning, Swami walks up to me. And, you know, I was not singing at that time, but I'm following. And as I'm following, Swami comes up and says, Ninna Barilila.
Yesterday you didn't come.
Yeah, yesterday you didn't come. As in, you did not come on Thursday. Okay. Mm. So which was like immediately a sense of me that Swami acknowledged that I did not come. So I just got up and this was something personal, right? Mm. So I said, Swami, exam ide. And in whatever broken Kannada that I knew. Mm. So there were exams. Okay. And that day was the auditing paper. Sorry, that day was the income tax paper. Thursday was the income tax paper. Okay. And I had done terribly in that income tax. And then Swami looks at me and says, that paper is gone for you. Swami says, you didn't do nothing. You're not going to pass that paper. And I said, yes, Swami, I know that. Like in my mind, I just looked at him and smiled at him. And he just walked off. And literally in that paper, you know, I dare not tell you how many marks I got. But yeah, that was another very memorable experience of how I may not come to Vrindavan. But, you know, so that morning, so I hated to miss any darshan of Swami or any bhajan of Swami. But obviously you have
in Vrindavan, because Swami is there only for a brief time.
Very
also.
Brief time, yeah. So imagine you have an exam, you can't avoid it, no? So that day was like, oh, damn it, you know, if only this exam was not there. So this kind of told me, though Swami did not make it, didn't express it openly like that, but it's okay if you are not there with me. I will be there with you. Right, so that was another beautiful instance.
Dear listeners, we will see that as we go ahead, that Vrindavan is a place which allowed extreme proximity for the devotees and students. And it was also actually followed up by intense separation also, because Swami would be there very briefly. So many interesting things happened apart from these lovely sweet incidents. It also led to devotees and students coming up with their own ways to build Swami within. So all of that will follow after the break. But before we go into the break, we will be actually thanking Brother Amai for his brief presence here. So Brother Amai, anything else you would like to share before leaving?
The other thing that it's not a personal experience, but it's just a thought. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure whether it has been covered before, but I recollect a beautiful thought that was given by Dr. Jayalakshmi Gopinath Madam, mm-hmm. the former principal and warden of the Anandpur campus. In fact, in her book, 50 Years at the Divine Lotus Feet, she writes that one of the cynosures of Vrindavan, you know, the cynosure of Vrindavan was the tree, the Sai Ram Shed Banyan tree. And that tree had almost got an iconic, divinely iconic status, equivalent to that of Swami, literally. Because Swami himself had given that kind of an icon, status to that.
It was central. It was around it that the Sai Ram Shed was built.
That's right.
Everything literally centered around the tree.
Correct. So even before the tree, this was back in the 60s, when there were just lots of trees. And then eventually all the other trees were kind of, you know, done away with. But this tree then became the central, you know, the central piece. And it was this tree under which the Lord Krishna's idol of which we have videos, was installed over there. And so all for all the Bangalore devotees who went to Vrindavan when Swami was not there, this tree was Swami. And there are legendary stories about these trees which says that that this tree was actually a great sage who was meditating when Lord Rama was going through there, and it seems he did not open his eyes, and other people kind of cursed him saying, the person whom you are meditating upon is going past and you are lost in meditation. You know, you are like a tree or a jada. And that is how this, apparently, you know, these are legendary stories. And it was then that it seems Rama said, don't worry, today you have not opened your eyes, but a time will come when I will come back. And so we had heard about all these stories. And when the Sai Ramesh Hall came, Swami just got rid of this tree. You know, as inconspicuously as anything else. You know?
As detached as.
Yeah. And that is the point that Dr. Jayalakshmi Gopinath says, that when Swami decided to cut the tree, there was a collective gasp, you know, of absolute shock.
Disbelief.
And disbelief that how could Swami get rid of the tree? I mean, this tree, you know. And then she writes so beautifully, and that is something that stayed with my thing. And here we were getting attached to trees. Instead of getting attached, you know, to the Lord, what the Lord only has established. Okay, this is a very, very important point for sadhakas. That many times we get so attached to the sadhana itself that we forget what is the purpose of the sadhana. Sometimes you have to even get rid of that sadhana in order to, you know, reach. And so here was one of the greatest trees in the Sai avatar, which was just done away with because it did not serve its purpose anymore. And that is something that, you know, has, you know, kind of been in my mind, that probably, I mean, maybe I'm sticking my neck out too far here, that even the form of the Lord sometimes is an obstacle to reach the Lord. And therefore, sometimes even the form needs to be done away with so that the ultimate is kept. Maybe this is not true with the form of the Lord, but at least that is what this great tree of Vrindavan tells us.
Now, interestingly, that was the same thought that occurred to me as you were narrating, but it occurred to me as what Radha had to undergo at Vrindavan there. I mean, among all the Gopikas, yes, all the Gopalas and Gopikas loved Krishna, but Radha is the Rani. She is the crest jewel among those who yearned for Krishna, and she just could not live without Krishna. She couldn't imagine life without Krishna. She's choking to death in the absence of Krishna, and yet Krishna doesn't seem to bother. That is, I think, just as you said, the tree, the form had to go. Finally, Radha gets that realization. And when she gets realization that the way Swami writes even Radha's story, the drama, Krishna comes running to Radha. And at that time, Radha says, Krishna, what do you think? How can you go away from me? This Yamuna is Krishna, this tree is Krishna, this sari is Krishna, the mud is Krishna. So, yes, it is indeed a very subtle yet profound message, and something for all of us to derive.
So, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity and sharing a few thoughts of mine. And, I'm going to be missing this beautiful satsang, but I'm sure that the listeners will enjoy it.
Yes, and you can catch it again. It'll be reprocessed and it'll be there on the Asia stream. Dear listeners, we'll take a quick little break. On the other side of the break, we'll continue with some more beautiful reminiscences of Vrindavan.
Oh,
Welcome back, dear listeners. We're talking about the beautiful golden Vrindavan days. And we had Brother Amai with us who was sharing his memories because he was associated with the campus in many capacities, especially as the Sevadal, because we all know that Swami students do get a lot of opportunity to be close to Swami in Prashantinilam, in Kodaikanal, in Vrindavan. But one of the unique things about Vrindavan is the opportunity that a lot of these young students who used to be studying in Bangalore, who used to be working in Bangalore, don't have this opportunity. And the story of Vrindavan itself is something which dates back to in the 40s, because Swami started visiting Vrindavan, when visiting Bangalore, from the 1940s, 44, right?
Yes.
When I think we've spoken extensively about it, even in our Satya to Sai series, Navaneetam
Naidu. Swami would travel in a train and go to Bangalore.
Right. Those early devotees, the two brothers, I think Navaneetam Naidu and a few other.
Narasimha Naidu and there was
right.
another.
And all of those early devotees. And I think sometime in the 60s, Swami actually bought the first property in Bangalore as such, and which was not the present day Vrindavan as we see. There was one small, very, very beautiful and charming looking cottage called Nandanavanam. In I think it's closer to where the General Hospital of Whitefield was in. I think when you cross those iconic bus stands, Hope Farm and all of these places, there used to be, I remember when we used to come along that way, the teachers used to tell us that this is where Swami had this Nandanavanam. And I think that was sometime in 1958. So it was a very, very long time back. And it was a...
At that time, it must have been some very far outside of Bangalore.
Absolutely. I think it must have been a town outside Bangalore itself. Mm. And it was a small place. I think Swami would have just stayed with a few devotees there, you know, on his way to Bangalore or on his way to Parthi from Bangalore. And I think it was in the 1960s. I think 1958, Swami first spotted that place. Nandanavanam, 1960, Swami bought that. And then once when Swami was driving past Whitefield, there was this very, very beautiful property. It was called the Mohan Palace and consisted of a huge bungalow. And there was actually a man-made water tank and number of trees, a beautiful orchard literally in front of that palace. And that the whole compound was called the Mohan Palace. And
Mohan is the name of Krishna.
Right, absolutely. And something which is more charming and attractive. And instantly Swami looked at it and Swami said, this is a very beautiful place. Is it available? Is the person selling it? I don't recall the exact details, but apparently the person who owned that property was not wishing to sell it to anyone. In fact, a lot of people had approached him and asked him for it. And he refused it because, you know, he had some memories related to that. His son was born there and the son was no more, so he was very attached to that place. And that was informed to Swami that, Swami, this person is not willing to sell. And Swami said, you tell him that it is me who is asking for it. And when he was eventually approached by these devotees, the moment they said Swami's name, he said, please take it. Please take it. Ask Swami to take it. And he said, let Swami take it with everything that there is in that palace. So with all the beautiful furniture that he had put in, cutlery and the woodwork and everything, he said, please ask Swami to take it. It's my offering to Swami. And of course, Swami insisted that he'll pay and all of that happened. And that is how the Mohan Palace was acquired and it was rechristened to Vrindavan Ashram. And in the early 1964, I think that's when Swami started regularly visiting the ashram, staying there, and that's how the second ashram came to be as such in Vrindavan. And as Amai was saying, there was that beautiful, beautiful tree right in the middle. There were many, many trees, but this one tree was a standout tree. And there are some pictures where the tree was actually open to the sky and there was hardly a platform where there used to be a chair and Swami used to sit there and devotees on either side. And slowly a small roof came around the tree, which was called the Sairam Shed, and that kept growing and growing, and eventually Sairam Shed could accommodate a few hundred devotees sitting under it. Then a Krishna statue came there. We have these very, very beautiful footage of Swami installing that Krishna statue and, you know, looking at it, jumping from the platform, jumping onto the platform, you know, aligning that whole thing. That was, I think, sometime in the 1960s and later 1960s. And then in 1969, and that's the event we are celebrating this weekend, Swami started the Arts and Science College in the Vrindavan Ashram, where Swami with a very, very small number of students, Swami started this college. Most of them came from actually villages around. A lot of them were day scholars who came from villages around. And when we say villages, they were literally villages. They were not suburbs of Bangalore, Kadivodi, Beltur, and right in all of these places. And we were talking to Nanjundia sir, Professor Nanjundia, who later became the controller of examinations. Apparently, he was when he came to Swami, a very, very well-renowned professor of commerce in the Bangalore University. Mm-hmm. He had a very good name, and in fact, when he would take classes in Bangalore University, the gallery used to be filled. Students would come, even those who would otherwise not come to the college would come mm-hmm. to attend his classes, and that was how popular he was. And he shifted to Vrindavan College to start, take up the activities of a lecturer. And apparently once he went and told Swami that, Swami, we have got such good teachers here, such committed staff here, and you know, students are also having a very good atmosphere for academics. But since our college is not popular, there are not many students who come here. You know, only the students around these villages come here. Maybe we should advertise about our college. And Swami strictly said no. Swami said, our performance will be our promotion. Swami said, and it will happen. And just that year, or the year after that, four of Swami's college students got ranks in the Bangalore University. And all of a sudden, everybody is wondering, where is this Satyasai College? And, you know, it's producing such rank holders. And that is how Swami's college became popular. And today we are celebrating 50 years, 1969 to 1981, 82, till the university came. It was functioning as a college under the Bangalore University, after which it became part of the, Satyasai University. But apart from the college, apart from the hall, the other building which was truly iconic, and we can talk endlessly about the stories and the memories that were enshrined in that building, is what was the bungalow which was in that Mohun Palace, which was very, very fondly referred to as the old bungalow, which was Swami's residence, right? And many of the students, in fact, 1983 or 82 was when that was brought down and the Trai Vrindavan was built. So from the mid-60s till 80s, in fact, from the 60s, it seems Rajmata was praying to Swami to allow them to bring that building down and, you know, build a befitting temple for Swami. Because it was a bungalow nonetheless, you know, it was built as a vacation home by some rich person. So she said, Swami, let's bring this down and we'll build a beautiful building for you. And Swami said, no, it took, you know, close to 15 years to convince Swami, and that's how eventually Trai Vrindavan came. But that bungalow, I think any student of the 60s and 70s we speak to will so very fondly refer to the old bungalow days.
In fact, when we go through the Radio Sai site, there's a beautiful article by, you know, Brother Anil Kumar, where he reminisces those days in the 1970s, in the old bungalow days. So apparently those days there was no other agenda on the cards other than just go and wait at the bungalow. The bungalow had one story, a ground floor and a first floor. The first floor had three rooms which were practically labeled as first room, second room, third room. It was actually the bedroom, the dressing room and the living room for Bhagwan. And the students would talk amongst each other. And in the early days, the students were students who would go to the Bangalore University, but just come and stay with Bhagwan till Swami's College, Arts and Science College, started at Vrindavan itself. So otherwise, these students were staying there, and many times they would not go to the college. They would just come and stand around the bungalow, and there were windows. And each student would pick up one window for himself, so that when Swami comes there, I can look at Swami and Swami can look at me. That was the agreement, and therefore they would try to finish breakfast and rush there. You know, right beside Swami's bungalow was another small building, a shed actually. That's where they would all be staying, and that's where they would be having their food. They would just rush in there to have food and rush back. And throughout the day, this was the thing that occupied their time, that made them feel fulfilled, to stand around the bungalow waiting for Swami. So Brother Anil Kumar was recollecting how on one occasion when Swami was coming down the steps. Now on the ground floor there were three main areas. One is the bhajan hall, one is the interview room, and one is a room which was famously called the safe room. Right. And it's called safe room not because of anything else, but simply because there was one big iron safe in that room.
Apparently in the earlier days, when big bungalows were built, the first thing which used to be installed was the safe. Hmm. Because you can't move it in, move it out after the building is built.
So you keep the safe
and
build,
then build the building around,
around it.
Right.
So the safe room, the bhajan hall and the interview room, these were there on the ground floor. So all the students would, they were allowed to stand in the safe room waiting there for Swami to come before he would go for the bhajan. There was a corridor outside the bhajan hall. And many times there would be these students standing outside the windows of this corridor as well. And as Swami walked in the corridor to enter either the front or back entrance of the bhajan hall, they would stretch out their hands and the lucky ones would get a pat, you know, a high five, or I don't know whether it's a low five, whatever, from Swami himself. From the window, Swami would do that. I mean, it was a beautiful time where they would just stand there all the while. And on one occasion, as Swami came down the steps to the safe room, you know, it was his schedule, giving darshan, bhajans and everything. So apparently Swami was singing out, Madhuvan ke Mohan Murali Bajaya, you know, Anand Ram Bal Ramji ke Bhaiya. It was such a beautiful experience to see Swami singing this. And it was as if Swami was giving the message that even though I am God, when I am doing my job, I also sing, you know, man mein Ram haath mein kaam, muh mein Ram haath mein kaam. I am singing bhajans. I mean, that is why, you know, as Brother Amay had said, my life is my message, expansion is my life. His life indeed is his message. As God also, he is doing this singing. So, Swami would go there, and another interesting thing that was part of the bungalow was right behind was a deer park. There was an enclosure where there were so many deer, and every now and then Swami would step out. Though it was called the deer park, there were also peacocks, there were rabbits. We have got some beautiful footage of Swami, you know, caressing the peacock, playing with the rabbits. There were parrots. There were so many animals there. And, you know, in every sense, it was literally the Brindavana. It was literally the Brindavana. And that is how Swami would even say many times, you know, in his discourses, that this is Brindavan. This is the same Krishna. So in that sense, Brindavan literally was such a beautiful and enchanting place where all the students experienced what the Gopalas and Gopikas of the Yore had experienced. I think, Prem, we have a little clip where Swami speaks in Kannada about Brindavan. Possibly we'll just play the clip and then continue this satsang after that.
Ee Brindavana, yavudo ondu Brindavana agi neevu tilukobeda. Ello ondu Krishna. ಯಾವ ಮಧುರದಲ್ಲೋ ಯಾವ ವೃಂದಾವನದಲ್ಲೋ ಯಾವ ಒಂದು ದ್ವಾರಕದಲ್ಲೋ ಇದ್ದಿರುವಂತ ನೀವು ಗಂಧಗಳಲ್ಲಿ ಹೋದಿರಬಹುದು, ಹಾಗೆ ನೀವು ನೆನೆಸ್ಕೋಬೇಡ. ಬೃಂದಾವನ ಮದೆ ಅಂದರಿದೆ ಗೋವಿಂದರು ಅಂದರಿ ವಾಡೆಯಲ್ಲಿ, ಆ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಇಲ್ಲಿಗೆ ಬಂದಿದ್ದಾರೆ, ಈ ಬೃಂದಾವನ ಇಲ್ಲಿಗೆ ಬಂದಿದೆ, ಅದರಿಂದ ನಾವು ಬೃಂದಾವನ ವಾಸಿಗಳು ಅಂತ ನೀವು ತಿಳ್ಕೊಂಡು ನಿರಂತರ ನಿಮ್ಮ ಹೃದಯ ಬೃಂದಾವನದ ಒಳಗೆ ಈ ಪರಮಾತ್ಮವಾದ ಕೃಷ್ಣವನ್ನು ನೀವು ನೆನೆಸಿಕೊಂಡು ನಿಮ್ಮ ಜನ್ಮವನ್ನು ಸಾರ್ಥಕ ಮಾಡ್ಕೋಬೇಕಂತ ನಾನು ಆಶಿಸ್ತಾ ನಮ್ಮ ಪ್ರಸಂಗ ವಿರಮಿಸ್ತಾ ಇದ್ದೀನಿ.
This Brindavan is a unique and sacred place. You may imagine Lord Krishna living in other places. But here and now, in this very Brindavan, lives Krishna himself. Swami's wish is that you will make your heart a true Brindavan, where the Lord can reside in it forever.
Swami would walk into the deer park. I just remembered that episode where Swami pointed out to a senior standing there and then said, these are my four-legged deers and these are my two-legged deers, you know, pointing to the students. It is so beautiful. And here how Swami is saying, don't think that you have missed the opportunity of being with Swami in the Brindavana. It's extra special for me because my mother tongue being Kannada, that attachment makes it sweeter. So sweetly Swami says, this Krishna is available for you at your Brindavan. Please ensure that you make full use of him. Use that Krishna fully in order to sanctify and fulfill your own life.
And starting in that year of 69 when the college came, I think it was, when Swami is saying this is that Brindavan and this is that Krishna, he literally began to relive those, that moments through these students. We have had the opportunity to speak to many, many of them from those who were in the first batches. And the kind of intimacy that Swami bestowed on them is remarkable. You really cannot speak about it. You know, when we were students, we had the opportunity, it's no less an opportunity to go up to Swami and give a rose or, you know, to offer aarti to Swami in Trayi. the chants which they had, you know, as part of their roll number or whatever it is, which would, you know, everybody would get that. It's not that Swami would pick you out for that chance. Everybody who becomes a student of the Arts and Science College would have the opportunity. That is, take food from the hostel and go to Swami's dining hall and be there when Swami is having his food. And Swami would insist that you also sit there on the same dining table. And after he has finished it with his the seniors and the devotees, Swami would ensure that the student sits there and eats, and Swami will ensure that everything is served.
And isn't it so beautiful, Prem, that Swami also eats the hostel food?
Right. I mean, and that's a tradition which continued till the very end. In fact, I recall when we were students, apparently the teacher in charge was once telling us that they had made ragi sankati, which was Swami's favorite food from his childhood. And they had prepared that and they had sent it. And Swami would know that which is that particular carrier which comes from the hostel. So when Swami saw ragi sankati, Swami was very happy. And Swami apparently sent word that he liked it a lot and it was nice. And that was the wrong thing to do. Because for the next few days, the boys kept saying, he's sending only ragi sankati, thinking that Swami liked it, till Swami said, enough, I've had enough of this, don't send me this anymore. I mean, it's not that he likes something, he does not like something, he's beyond all of that. But everything was an opportunity to interact with the students. And I mean, as you were saying, every window, the fact is, these students were given that opportunity to literally live a life which was absolutely centered and consumed by Swami and Swami's presence. And you can only imagine what would have been on the other side of the wall. You know, Swami was also giving that same time and thing, everything. Like, there are stories of how the students would have to go in lines to Swami and show Swami their monthly budget, right? You know, how much money they get from home, how much are they spending for soap, how much are they spending for oil and all of that. Because, you know, that was the kind of interest, because we've also, as part of the conversations with Sai, we've seen Swami's vision for the organization as he was talking. He said, you know, I'm investing so much in these people because they're going to carry forward these values. And literally, because in 1969 to the time when, I think 1979, 1980, when the college in Prashantinilam started coming, Swami spent almost 9 months to 8 months in every year in Vrindavan, visiting Prashantinilam only for the main festivals, only for Shivratri and for birthday and Guru Purnima.
Dasara.
Right, but otherwise you would quickly go back to Vrindavan, and throughout the year it would be, you know, Swami and students in Vrindavan.
That was one beautiful phase, dear listeners, and, you know, because there is so much to tell about Vrindavan. After the old bungalow days came the Trai Vrindavan days, but we will take all that again after a quick little break. Don't go anywhere.
Thank you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are reminiscing on some of the beautiful memories that Vrindavan holds, and how much ever we try, it'll just be a drop in the ocean, at least a drop in the big pond, big lake. Speaking of which, it reminds me of a beautiful episode that happened. We promised before the break that we'll be moving over to the 3 days, but before that, this was a very memorable incident. The college building, which is there, you know, it's in the shape of a dam, and many people have said that it is very symbolic of the great potential it holds. That's why it's shaped like a dam. And it was Colonel Jogarao who was given the task of supervising and monitoring the construction of that building itself. Once that was complete, Swami felt that the students needed to live in better living conditions, you know. So Swami said that we need to build a hostel for the students. And once again, it was Colonel Jogarao who was tasked with finding a suitable place where the hostel had to be built. Now, Swami's residence, the old bungalow, was at one end of Vrindavan. Next to it was the old shed where the students were staying. Next to the shed was this huge tank, water tank, which had been dug in the ground itself. And after that,
in fact, I think in the meanwhile, I think 1972 was the first summer course. So that used to be used for the assemblies and all of that, when thousands of students used to come for the summer course. Some of the Balvikas rallies used to be held there. It became like a small amphitheater kind of a thing.
Yes, so with steps on the side.
Right.
Steps on the side where people could sit and watch.
Right.
There are some beautiful photographs of Swami sitting on a small dais there and laughing and enjoying the things. But basically it was a low area. It was a tank which I think got emptied completely and began to be used as an arena. After the tank was a road, and I think that is where the original Mohan Palace ended, because after that came the what we see today as the big cricket ground, and all of that was, I think, part of the Rajmata's
property
which she offered to Bhagwan. Even the institute building which is there stands on that property. So it is somewhere there that Jogarao selected a piece of land, and he came with plans, and he said, Swami, this is where we can build the hostel. And the plans, as it happens with Swami's case, it went ahead at breakneck speed, and everything was ready. And finally the plans were brought to Bhagwan. And Swami was at that time with the students, seated there with the students and teachers, everyone. Once the students got to know that a hostel is being planned right next to the institute, there was a kind of feeling of sorrow. The sorrow was because they felt that we will now be so far away from Swami. Today, if you see, it is about 200 to 300 meters away from Swami's residence, but they could not imagine that distance.
Right. In fact, to give the devotees an idea, even today where the hostel stands, till I think 99 when the new Kalyan Mandapam came, from her rooms in the sea floor, we could see Swami walking in his dining hall. You know, that was the kind of proximity that Vrindavan offered between Swami's residence and the students.
And with that, some little suspense of my story, Prem, has taken away.
Oh my God.
anyway, it's such sweetness. The sweetness overpowers the suspense. The thing is that the land that was selected, Swami was so excited. Swami was telling the boys, you know what, you're going to get good facility. You can stay comfortably. You need not sleep one over the other. You can, you know, roll around. You'll have enough place for your luggage, everything. But the boys were downcast because they felt, Swami, all that is fine, but we'll be far away from you. In the meanwhile, one of the students quickly wrote a letter, and he offered it to Bhagwan, and Swami took the letter from him, read it, and it looked as if Swami himself was dumbstruck for a moment. Then he looked at the boy and said, can I read this letter aloud for everyone else? The boy said, Swami, sure. And I don't know the exact words of the letter, but the general purport or the context was, he had written, Swami, you are building this out of your love for us, but we are not happy, Swami, because we'll be so far away from you. We don't want to go there. We want to be close to you always. But if you insist that we have to go there, please tell them to build another building as your residence also next to us. You please be with us always. Be close to us. Be not only dear, be near to us as well. You know, this is what he had written. And Swami was very moved. And Swami looked at Jogarao and said, what Jogarao, what can we do? And Jogarav just maintained a silence because in his opinion, there's no other place available. It's practically impossible to do this. But if Swami wants to build his residence somewhere else, okay, fine. Why not? I mean, he was just silent. Then Swami looked at the principal, Principal Narendra, and asked him, what do you say? He said, Swami, this is between you and the boys. This is a devotee's yearning. But definitely, Swami, it is definitely true that you are their life and it will be meaningless without you. Instantly, Swami changed the entire plan. You know, all these weeks and months of planning was shelved. And Swami just decided and Swami said that there is that water tank, that arena over there. Build the hostel over there. In one instant, everything changed. And it is. I don't think it's a coincidence that this happened in Vrindavan. Because Vrindavan always, when we speak of the Dwapara Yuga Vrindavan, it stands for the intimacy and the intense relationship that existed between the Lord and the devotees. The same thing continued even in the Kali Yuga. And that is the reason why among all the hostels of Bhagavan, if we go to the Vrindavan hostel, you will see there is a basement floor as well, because it seemed only natural to build it because it was a water tank of that depth. And once again, adorning the center of that basement is a beautiful idol of Krishna playing the flute.
Right, and that's one of the most beautiful stories of Vrindavan, because even otherwise, if you look at it, even among Swami's campuses, that's the only campus where the hostel is within the ashram.
Hmm. So
even in Prashanti Nilayam, we have a Vidyagiri
area
where all the campuses and all the schools and the hostels come. And compared to that, the hostel in Prashanti Nilayam is really, really far away from Swami's Mandir.
More than a kilometer, to be precise.
Right. And the very fact that Swami decided to condescend to accept that prayer and build this was a testimony of the relationship which was there between Swami and the students at that time. Very, very few students. We've heard many stories about that. In fact, one more personality who was central to the events happening in Vrindavan those days was Mr. Rama Brahmam. We have heard so much about him. He was the caretaker of not only Swami's bungalow, but all of the properties. Swami had many, many, a few acres of fields behind the old bungalow, which used to be taken care of by him. He used to go around. The students used to drive tractors and plow.
Grow crops.
They used to help with Mr. Rama Brahmam. Then there was, of course, the Gokulam, the first Gokulam which was there. The boys used to be working in the Gokulam, and there are these stories of the 70s when students were, we had the fortune of speaking extensively to Mr. Vijay Bhaskar, late Mr. Mm-hmm. Vijay Bhaskar, who later became the trustee of the Central Trust, but one of the earliest students of Swami's college. He used to tell that, you know, they had an extremely tight schedule of getting up at 4:30 in the morning, helping in the fields or in the Gokulam, or, you know, you would have work in the hostel and all of that. But in spite of that, in fact, he had a record. He said, I think it was not broken for many, many decades, the marks that he had got in BCom. He completed that year with the maximum number of gold medals by any single student after this tight schedule, right? And in fact, he would say, he had narrated about one incident when he had an exam on one particular day. That afternoon, he had to go to Bangalore and write an exam, and it had rained the previous evening. So whenever it rains, that's the best time to plow your field. Right? So Ramramam Garu came and told him, hey, boy, come and tomorrow morning, let's plow the field. So he couldn't refuse Ramramam. And so he got up in the morning and he started driving the tractor around the field. Around, I think, 9:30 or something, Swami came out and asked, where is this fellow? And they looked around, they didn't find him in the hostel. And then Swami said, he's in the field, go and call him and come. So he came running to Swami and Swami said, what are you doing? You have an exam today and you're like this. And Swami sent him in his own car to the Bangalore University to write his exam. And of course, he got a gold medal even in that exam. And, you know, that the concept that, you know, when your focus is on the right thing, that everything else falls into place. Today, as part of the 50th anniversary celebrations, the Telugu team has extensively spoken to many, many old students from the 1970s. Each one of them are excelling in whatever they're doing right now. You know, they might have been ordinary students at that time, but just that discipline that Swami taught them and that the values that Swami inculcated in all of them. One of the students was saying that now, I think right now, if I'm not wrong, he's one of the top chartered accountants in Hyderabad. You know, he was telling that he came from a very ordinary background. He was, I think, he studied in Telugu medium. Swami was so concerned about him. Every now and then Swami will call him and ask him, you know, how are you studying? He was an intelligent student, but you know, you can understand the shift it is from Telugu medium to English medium. And suddenly the university education is a huge leap from your school syllabus and all of that. So one day Swami calls him and asks him, what happened? How are you studying? So he said, Swami, I can't understand a thing in the classes. I'm finding it very difficult. And Swami said, what happened? Why are you saying like this? So he said, Swami, they're all speaking in English and I cannot understand. Swami asked him, who are your teachers? So he named three or four of the teachers. So among them, I think one or two were Swami students who had become teachers. Right? One of them is still around. Tukaram sir was one of them. He mentions his name. So Swami told them, see, these two teachers are coming from the city. They're Bangalore University teachers. We cannot tell them anything. But these two fellows, I'll straighten them, Swami says. And you know, Swami calls Tukaram sir and the other student who had become a teacher. And Swami says, what are you teaching? You know, you're not even ensuring that the students are understanding what you're teaching. So this student got really scared. You know, you have complained about your teacher to Swami and Swami is calling the teacher in front
taking
of you.
Task.
Right? He said, oh my God, this is going to turn very bitter. But Swami called them and said, you know, why is he doing like this? You know, you ensure that he studies well and there might be other students like this. Ensure that all of them understand what you're teaching. And he said for the next few months, the kind of cooperation that he saw from his teachers and the way all of his classmates came to help him, you know, seeing that, you know, he's lagging behind because of this. He said it was not a miracle in that sense. Swami did not make me from a student who was failing to a top ranker. He said purely by Swami's love and involvement, Swami made it happen. He said that year I cleared my exam. Next year I cleared with distinction. And by the time I passed out with a university rank. And he said, you know, Swami's involvement and Swami's, it's a simple thing, you know, just that sensitivity towards the people whom you're working with.
Truly, it is like the case of where each one is living for the other and everyone together is living for God. And that would get highlighted more so in Vrindavan because of the Thrai session. And I'm unable to resist it any further because, you know, Thrai Vrindavan is a place where most of us have spent some time at least. And, you know, Thrai session was literally the case of all of us children sitting at the feet of our loving mother, loving father.
Before you start talking about Thrai session, we'll have to inform the listeners. Dear listeners, on our YouTube channel, we have part 5 of the Prashanti Chronicles, where this time it's not Prashanti Nilayam Chronicles, but it is nevertheless a very, very important part of Swami's life because it is on Thrai Vrindavan, the Swami's residence. Please go watch it. We're not sharing details which are shared on that because it's a phenomenal story by itself, how the old bungalow came to be replaced by Thrai Vrindavan. And Thrai Vrindavan was going to host what was famously called Thrai Session, which we're going to talk about. So do catch that story. It's got some lovely footage, pictures. Being in Radio Sai for so many years, I have not seen myself. So I was so thrilled to watch those photos and videos. So do go and catch that video.
Absolutely. And coming back to the Thrai Session, you know, which I had started, so nice it would be. I remember how we would be waiting to just rush in and sit in Swami's residence. The ground floor of Thrai Vrindavan had now become a central hall and a jhula room. A jhula room was like a crescent that went about half around the Thrai circular building. And the central hall in which all the overflow of the students would go and fill in. So Swami would sit in the jhula room and sitting on the jhula, Swami would speak. I mean, there is no limit to the kind of things that would happen in a Thrai session. Many times Swami would himself speak and he would also, you know, point out to mistakes made in the bhajans while the singers were singing outside. He would ask other students and other teachers to talk, to give speeches. I remember one particular Thrai session, you know, we were all very excited because it was on a Sunday. And when Swami is in Vrindavan on Sunday, a delegation would arrive from Puttaparthi because it's a holiday. They would come to have darshan and then go back. So in that delegation were also some of the singers whom we are all, you know, big fans of, Brother Ravi Kumar included, from the Prashanti Nilayam Hospital. So they had all come, and that day they were all seated in the front and Swami said, I think today we should have a music session, a song session. And you know, I was sitting somewhere in the fourth or fifth line, and I was simply thrilled because I'm right in the front. I can see Swami all the while. My favorite singers are here, and Swami is saying, let's have a song session. And there was, I mean, I was feeling very excited and thrilled. What happened turned out to be like an anticlimax. But today it's such a beautiful memory because Swami said, okay, now I want you to sing the first song. And Swami pointed out to a person who musically was not at all accomplished, you know. Mm-hmm. He picked the warden after that. He picked different teachers. He picked different devotees. In fact, there was one devotee whom he picked and told to sing, and he said, Swami, I can't sing. Swami said, no, you definitely will be able to sing. Say something. He said, no, Swami, really, I can't sing. Swami said, no, no, you sing. Then he started, I think, a shloka or something. Shuklam, Bharadaram, and you know, he just started something. Swami said, ha, correct, correct, you can't sing. Yeah, you stop. You know, it was so hilarious, so humorous. But it was like a total anticlimax. And today, as I said, it's such a sweet memory because the whole session was definitely a singing session. And it was songs by all the worst, terrible and most horrible singers that we have ever witnessed, you know. And it also showed how Swami is actually the Bhavapriya. He's the one who loves the feeling. It doesn't matter. The raga and tala is not so important for him. It is important for us to get the bhava, and that is why it is important for him. Otherwise, the tune and the rhythm don't matter for him. These were some lessons we learned. Another Trai session I remember is where Swami said, picked up a boy and told him to speak in Tamil, and he spoke in Tamil. Then Swami picked up a student to speak in Telugu, then in Kannada, then in Hindi. Then it was a multilingual presentation, which was again amazing. Then what to say about the materializations? Many materializations which I have witnessed, and I'm sure it will be your case as well, Prem. Be it rings or chains or vibhuti, different things, many things we have seen Swami materializing. In fact, if you remember, we had this group of students whom we used to funnily call as the MTV. MTV meaning Meera TV, because they would be Swami's channel, if you can say so, to sing Meera bhajans, Meera bhajans, Meera bhajans. On one occasion, in one Trai session, five materializations, five different rings for all these boys of the Meera bhajan group, Meera group, and all the rings fit them perfectly. I also remember how in Trai Vrindavan, Swami would once come and ask a question, you know. One question that I remember is Swami would ask, when Hanuman crossed over the ocean and went to Mother Sita, what is the first question that Mother Sita asked Hanuman? And you know, everybody would hazard their own guesses, and Swami would make fun of those who got it wrong, or Swami would be serious on sometimes. The best thing is, in such cases, Swami would say, those who get the answer right, I'm going to give a prize. Right. Instantly, the number of hands would go up, you know, who will try to give the answer. And at least on two occasions, I myself have seen Swami saying, good answer, correct answer, waving his hand and materializing a prize and giving it to the boy. I mean, it is endless and limitless, the number of things that happened in the Trai session.
The beauty of it is, it was sweetness intertwined with Swami's omniscience also. I mean, talking about objects being materialized. I remember in my first year undergraduate, Swami had just come back from Kodai, 99 Kodai, and Swami looked at one of the devotees, and Swami was saying, talking to him about the Kodai trip. Right? Swami was talking, and in excitement, Swami is telling him, I materialized Mother Sita's Chudamani in Kodai. You know, did you hear about it? So this devotee said, Swami, I missed it. Swami said, you want to see? And Swami waved his hand and materialized that Chudamani and, you know, showed it. And wow. Then Swami walked around showing it to everybody. So, you know, one
you
hand.
Hold the side.
Right, we were all there. Oh, wow. You know, and the kind of, the same thing, you know, the Swami asking questions and saying, if whoever gets the answer right, I'll tell you. Once, apparently, this happened, I think, a couple of years before we all joined. Mm. When Swami asked this question, I'm going to ask a question. Whoever answers correct, I'm going to give a ring, Swami said. Give a ring? I think Swami said, I'll give a ring, right? So there was this one particular boy who actually did not put up his hand. But by then, so many boys had, you know, shouted out the answer that he got to know the answer. And Swami was looking around, and suddenly Swami looked at him and Swami said, do you want to tell the answer? And, you know, here Swami pulling him out, and he said, he parroted out the answer, which by now had been leaked by the others. And Swami said, correct answer. And Swami waved his hand and gave him a ring. And apparently the warden became very emotional because this boy was one of the most hardworking boys in the hostel. He would work till 10 o'clock in the night in the kitchen. He would help in all kinds of work. He was always available for any seva which was there in the hostel in the university. So the warden became very emotional because, you know, here was in front of you, Swami is rewarding someone who is doing silent work. You know, no one has spoken about him to Swami. So the warden wanted to say something nice about this boy, and he said, Swami, this boy works a lot. Swami said, I know. And warden was not satisfied. He said, Swami, in the kitchen he works so much. Swami said, I know.
Mm.
And then he said, Swami, this boy. Swami said, keep quiet. And then for the next 10 minutes, Swami started speaking about this boy's father, who just like how he works in the hostel, his father used to work in Shivam in Hyderabad.
Hmm.
Was a very, very silent and very hardworking sevadal. And Swami spoke about this boy's father, and Swami said, you know, he does all of this. He goes every Sunday, he does this. And then Swami looked at all the teachers around, and Swami said, after so many years, you still are surprised by Swami's omniscience. You know, how beautiful this is, because, you know, that was what a thrice session was. The lovely proximity with Swami, the playfulness. But every now and then that curtain would part and you would see, you know, whose presence you're in.
I'm sure that, as you said, the warden was very moved. The next moment, I'm sure the boy must have been so
absolutely
moved. Because Swami is speaking about his father. No, because we are running short on time, Prem, I just want to recollect one beautiful memory I have of Trai Brindavan and Brindavan. And it shows everything, you know, Swami's love, Swami's sweetness, and of course, you know, Swami's omniscience, omnipresence. After 12th grade, we had all gone to Brindavan because Swami was in Brindavan. After 12th standard is the time when many people go out for engineering, medical, and they'll be leaving. So that is the time we went for seeking blessings. Swami had called us in for a Trai session. It was a beautiful session, and that is not the subject here. But during the Trai session, something interesting happened. As Swami was seated on the jhula, one of my classmates, Vijay, he looked at Swami and he said, Swami, there's something stuck in your hair. Swami said, is it a snake? Then he said, no, Swami, something is there, I don't know what it is. Swami said, you know, that kind of spontaneity, I have never seen even in Swami elsewhere, you know. Swami just said, oh, is it there? Take it out for me then. And you know, my heart almost came in my mouth because this Vijay got up on his knees, Swami bent his head down, and he plunged both his hands into Swami's bushy hair and slowly pulled out some coconut shavings, you know. Swami must have broken coconut and they must have flown into his hair, and he cherished them and he kept them, and I felt very positively envious of this boy. I said, oh Swami, what an opportunity, oh my God. I never knew that this kind of proximity is possible with Swami, and it was Brindavan that opened my eyes to the opportunities, possibilities. A fleeting and spontaneous prayer in my heart, Prem. It was just a thought that, hey, how I wish I also get to touch your hair like that, Swami. But nothing else happened. Throughout that session, I kept looking at his hair just to see if by chance there is something else there. There was nothing. The session ended, got over. I joined later as a Brindavan student. 3 years later, you know, by this time Swami had a fall, because of which Swami would return after darshan in the golf cart. And one day as I was standing in Trai Brindavan, this is in the third year undergraduation, the first episode had happened in 12th grade. So 3 years later. And Swami would walk and go for darshan, but after darshan he would return in the golf cart. That was the practice. So as Swami was walking and going, I was just looking, and I looked at Swami's face and looked at Swami's hair. In Swami's hair there was a mango flower, you know. I saw that mango flower, and in an instant my mind travelled back to 3 years back. And I said, Oh God, can I actually put my hand into his hair and take it out? At that moment, you know, Swami turned, looked at me, and then looked at the sevadal, and as Brother Amai said, it was his indication to open the door. So the door opened, and I dared not do anything. I just stood, and Swami went, and I felt, oh my God, I think this was Swami's response to my prayer 3 years back, and I missed it. That was a feeling within me. But then at that time, Nandagopal sir comes and he says, you know, Swami has agreed for a new chance. What is that? Every time Swami's golf cart goes and Swami has to get down at his residence, the golf cart is a little high, so a stool has to be placed for Swami. And that chance was getting initiated then. So he said, every student will get a chance, but now there's nobody. Are you ready to be the first one? I said, yes, sir. Great. So I was given a footstool, and as Swami returned after the bhajan, I was standing at Swami's door with the footstool ready to place it so that Swami can get down. Can you believe it, Prem? When Swami was getting down from the car, from the golf cart, I saw that mango flower was still in his hair. And this time I just said, Swami, there is something in your hair. And Swami looks at me and says, is it a snake? It was so beautiful, you know, like reliving what had... I said, no, Swami, there is something. And with that same spontaneity and love, now Swami was actually holding somebody else's hand to walk, but yet he just bent his head towards me and said, take it out then. And now I plunged my hand into his hair and pulled out that mango flower, which I still have with me in my refrigerator at home. But this is such a beautiful memory, and I feel it is Vrindavan which made it possible.
Right. And I mean, this is an absolutely not even a decent sample size of what Vrindavan is all about, because as we said, it's not just about the chances the students had. In fact, the Balvikas children of Vrindavan, I'm sorry, of Bangalore, they used to have very, very beautiful interactions with Swami. And in fact, every Sunday, they used to get interviews as Balvikas classes. You know, this area Balvikas, this Malleshwaram Balvikas, this Jayanagar Balvikas. Like that, Swami used to interact with them. On Sundays, some of the teachers would narrate that sometimes the train which comes from city to Whitefield station would get delayed. And those days, Swami would actually delay his darshan, because he knows the devotees will be coming from Bangalore in that train. So the Swami will spend a little extra longer in the hostel with the students till they come. And, you know, as we said, you know, there is this wall. On the other side is Swami. On this side are the devotees. It's very difficult to say who yearned more, right? And I think that's what Vrindavan was all about. And dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed as much this reflection as we enjoyed bringing it to you. And we'll probably end with another beautiful classic old bhajan, on the other side of which we'll be joined by Brother Chandu for the next segment of today, Love to Love.
Oh, are listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.